This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in the Michael Lynch collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. The Liz Marsh. Bismarck. No, was it Bismarck?
Liz Marsh. Liz Marsh.
Liz Marsh. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place with a big butt play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Well, let's talk the fix.
I didn't even know.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I'm just curious. Teach me Nation. Let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
You talk a good one, but you don't do what you're supposed to do. I act on what I feel and never deal with emotions. I'm used to living big dogs that I was straight coast. What's the difference between me and you? You talk a good one, but you don't do what you're supposed to do. I act on what I feel and never deal with emotions. I'm used to living big dogs that I was straight coast.
Yo, I stay with it while you try to perpetrate, play with it.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast here on this Monday evening, live coming at you. Coming off the Money in the Bank pay-per-view weekend, and we're going to talk a little bit about that weekend, and we're going to dive into the Vintage Vault once again, as we usually do here on a Monday. And, of course, I must bring in, no longer my PIC, but now my Eskimo brother, Mr. Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
How you doing, Taco? JR, always a pleasure.
A lot of Eskimo brothers in PTV Nation nowadays.
Yes, very much so.
Brad, me and Mark Claire. You,
Big Igloo,
Joe,
Jesus, just Joe. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to episode 320 of the Place to Be podcast. It was Money in the Bank weekend. How was first off, JR? How was your Friday and Saturday? I didn't see you. I only saw you yesterday. So
that was good. Nice weekend. Not bad. Saturday was backbreaking labor with my buddy the cowboy. Helped me out. We laid about 7 yards of mulch, and
so I saw it was a lot of mulch. Saw the pictures.
As you know, my backyard is not easy to reach.
Maneuver.
It's a big hill. So we had a wheelbarrow, about 13 wheelbarrows each, up that hill full of mulch to store whatever we didn't use. So, big thanks to the cowboy there for helping me out. I got him some Boneheads lunch as a thank you.
Nice.
And then we had a great day on Sunday, Scott, because we had the
PTB
crew heading up to shipping up to Boston, I guess, as the saying goes.
Yes.
Check out the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. We all met here around 12:30. You arrived. Mm-hmm. Oh, you arrived a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. We had Mr. D'Amato came with Roger. That was a great time getting to see Mr. D'Amato. Aaron George all the way down from Montreal.
Yes. Nice to meet Mr. George. It was a pleasure.
Roger's cousin's boyfriend, Joe, came.
Yep.
We had Mr. Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing anyone? In the early crew? Is that everyone that was in the van?
That was everybody. Yeah, that was everybody.
Okay. So that's everyone that was in the van. We went. We had a fun time in the afternoon, traversing around.
Yep.
Stories that will last a lifetime.
That's for sure.
And then we hopped back in the van. We headed up to Boston. We ran into Mr. Eric Eels, a big fan of the show.
Yep.
Mr. Dan. And we went and had dinner at the Force. A delicious dinner.
We did. Yep.
All get to gather around and have some food and prep for the show.
Yep. Highly recommend it. Besides the great Boneheads, of course, in West Warwick, if you're ever in the area of the hub, otherwise known as the TD Garden, if you're going to a Bruin game, Celtic game, house show September 14th, JR, we heard that, four times last night?
I know, right? Yeah, they kept plugging the crap out of that. Yeah. And we had really good seats, and we broke up into groups of four, because that's where our tickets came. So I sat with you and Dan and Aaron, and then Mr. D'Amato sat with Andy and Roger and Joe. And we were right in front, right like on the aisle. About, 15 rows up off the floor?
Yeah, yep.
And we were pretty much right even with the Money in the Bank truck. So we had a really good view of the ring and of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting show. started off very well. Tag match was great with the Usos and the Wyatts.
Yep.
And the first Money in the Bank match I thought was great.
Yes.
Even despite the finish with that awful tombstone of Dean Ambrose. But
my God. I don't think Kane's dropped a worse tombstone since the bad one to Taker all the way back at Bad
Maybe
Blood
Linda? 97. Was it better or worse than Linda?
Well, Linda's doesn't count because you don't really want to hurt Linda. But, I mean, in terms of a guy that could take a tombstone bump, I mean, that was pretty hideous.
Apparently, you don't visit many Facebook chat pages or YouTube comment pages. I think a lot of people want to hurt Linda because they're mentally unstable. But the heat for Ambrose and Rollins was off the charts. That's a money feud. And Ambrose, it's funny because everyone wanted that guy to turn heel because he looked like such a natural heel. But my Lord, is he a natural baby face. Just
oh, man. He's
so
got that,
good at it.
Yeah, he's got that. He's channeling that inner 89 to 92 Piper.
Yeah,
he really is.
The fire and the charisma and
and
just the revenge factor, just everything about him. The selling has been phenomenal.
Yep.
The selling that arm yesterday. My personal favorite, of course, was getting to see my boy Rusev in person.
Yeah.
I was humming the music for the next 7 hours.
Yes, love it.
It was in the great picture. I got that little video of the Russian flag. main event, not great.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're talking about two different kinds of ladder matches. The briefcase match was the jumpers and the spot guys. And the main event is the guys who use the ladders and just bludgeon each other. They don't do any jumping or any of that jazz. That's all just beating the crap out of each other. And, Randy Orton took that stiff shot with in the top of the head. He had 11 staples put in today.
Yeah, that derailed things a little bit. But, yeah, they didn't have that bumper in the match. So,
no.
And they tried. I mean, Sheamus and Cesaro, I thought, looked pretty good.
Mm.
And Orton worked hard, did a little bit too much Kane for everyone's liking, and not a surprise at all that John Cena won. And there's a lot of backlash on the internet that I saw today. A lot of people, and there were a lot of people threatening to not renew the network now because Cena won. And I mean,
please,
I don't know how you could be surprised that he won if anyone was surprised. I thought it was fairly obvious that he was going to win. I want to see where they head into SummerSlam with it, if they do the Brock Lesnar thing or not. Be very curious, but
yeah, I mean, for the Daniel Bryan fans, what do you want them to do? Just stop the product until he's healthy? I mean,
well, I think they're
guys.
Worried maybe. Yeah, well, I think there were a lot of people felt that you had a lot of new talent in that match, and they all just kind of didn't do much, and then Cena upends Orton to win.
The only guy I could have seen them do pull an audible, and we were saying this in the van on the way home. I think the only guy that could have really pulled an audible on and said, you know what, change it up, this guy needs to win, was Bray.
Yeah,
his pop was off the charts. Cesaro, I think they should wait till he is more away from Heyman and turns him more face. But Bray could have won it last night very easily. But whatever. So Cena's becoming almost like the transition baby.
I know.
He's usually in there when a big heel needs to win, and because he can eat a pin and nobody cares. Oh. So for Cena haters, take that into consideration. Although quickly,
No,
go ahead, finish point.
I think it'll be interesting to see where they go, if it's going to be dependent on Daniel Bryan,
right?
If he's going to be healthy or not.
Yeah.
And where he's going to stand, how quickly he'll be back. I mean, that interview last night, if that was all truthful, does not sound very good at all.
No. And now they said on Lords of Pain today that he may be gone almost to the Rumble.
Yeah.
Six months
to a year, they're saying.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
That's
the case.
Yeah, I mean, I said when it happened that I was afraid he may never be the same again. I definitely don't think he's going to ever get the same push again. Even though, I mean, still the most over guy last night. Still got the biggest pop of the night. The fans were still crazy for him. I just don't think, he'll ever hit that peak that he had back in April.
Pop was good last night, but I mean, if they wait any longer, Lord knows what'll happen. Somebody else will take his place. D'Ambrose may take his place.
I know. It's funny because, we sat here concerned about breaking up the Shield, and are they going to get lost in the shuffle? Do they pick their? But so far, they're doing well with all three.
Yeah.
And Rollins felt like a big deal with Triple H's backing. He's got the briefcase now. Ambrose is clearly all set. Not to worry about him. And Reigns. I mean, Reigns looked good in the main event, and he got big pops, too. And all three still hanging in there as solo acts and still doing pretty well. And they found a way to really break them up without having them, obviously Rollins and Ambrose are feuding, but it feels legit. And they were able to split up Ambrose and Reigns without any trouble and also making them feel different. Like, Reigns is still kind of clinging to the Shield thing. Ambrose is completely just off the rails and doesn't look like the Shield Ambrose at all, and Rollins obviously has transformed into the corporate Triple H guy. So I thought they did a nice job keeping them all unique after splitting up without feeling forced.
Right. No, absolutely. And let's not forget about Reigns. I mean, everyone feels he was kind of lost in the shuffle in that match last night. He was absolutely not. And we'll delve more into this next week with you and Kevin and me and the other main event, Jamokes. We'll talk more about the show in depth because we have a great show this evening to talk about.
We do
as well, JR. But yeah, well, it was a good show overall. Look, and I said this to a bunch of people today. Live shows you can't really gauge per se because you're just so stoked. Crowd's hot, and last night's crowd was great.
Oh, very hot. I mean, that's what made the card outside of the Rhodes Brothers match, which to me was the only quiet and Layla, but that was quick.
Yeah.
Outside of those two matches, I thought the crowd was pretty into everything, so it kept us going. It flew by. It was a quick show. I thought it moved pretty fast.
It was a very quick show. You're absolutely right about that. And again, we want to preface, I don't think the quiet was the Dusts. They're awesome. I just think nobody cares about Rybacksel anymore, to be honest with you.
I just think it's a match that no one cared about, and I think everyone was burned. That was right after the Money in the Bank, right?
No, I thought that was after Rusev. I think that was after our boy Rusev. I think it was Rusev, the Dusts, Layla, and then the title match. Yeah, Rusev was after the Dusts.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, you just said Rusev was before.
Hmm.
I'm looking it up right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was saying,
was after Money in the Bank.
Okay.
Because that's why the crowd just was
burnt. Oh, that's true.
From that.
And then Rusev was
after that.
You know what? You're right, because they were interviewing Fandango, and I'm like, why is there another referee in the ring? That was the Rusev thing. But incidentally, like I said, I was finishing my thought earlier. If you are in the Boston area for anything and you're in near the hub, the Fours is a fantastic restaurant. Mm-hmm. Cheap, inexpensive food, good burgers, good place to go. But I love that whole street. Sullivan's Tap and Boston Beer Works. Just great places on that street. So.
And it's funny that you mentioned the referees, by the way, because that was one of our favorite parts throughout the night. Was watching the refs get angry when like the post match antics are going on. Like it started with Adam Rose or Paige. I think it started with Paige was the first one where Charles Robinson was like screaming at her to get out of the ring, and then Adam Rose was getting yelled at the whole way. After every match, whoever was celebrating was just getting bitched out by the referee to get out to keep the show on time. It was pretty entertaining to watch every match.
It was, but it was they're like banging with their fists. Come on!
Yeah, I know. Charles Robinson was really getting angry.
It was so hilarious. We were waiting for Fandango to yell at the women to get out of the ring.
I know. It's nuts.
But good show overall. I mean, it was a fun show to watch. You know, you don't, you know, God forbid that guy catches me again. I don't want to grade matches live.
I know, right?
It was a good show. It was a good show for what it was. And people got to understand now, you got to look at Cena now I want to delve into this more in depth on our shows next week. Cena's become a transitional face champion. All right. He can win anytime and he can lose anytime and nobody cares either way. So they have to take that into consideration, particularly if this whole Brock thing is going to go down. So, but in any
case. Going on here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we talking too much? Why are you still here? You tutoring? Oh God, it smells like beef again in here. By the way, one more note. I appreciate you consistently playing Jackie Moon on the ride home last
night. Oh, no problem. I enjoyed it as well.
Yes. All right. Speaking of Jackie Moon and this has nothing to do with Jackie Moon, but he's just cool. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we go back to another great show, JR, involving a big gimmick. But instead of ladders of violence, it is a chamber of violence.
Brock Lesnar retains the title. What a fight! A career-altering event!
Brock, we don't know the damage that Hell in a Cell did to you yet. You want to go. You want to take on the Big Show, and he's 7 feet tall, 500 pounds.
7 feet tall, 500 pounds, and he's calling you out. He is going to rip you limb from limb. I can't protect you, Brock. You don't play as a member of this team right here. I'm Brock Lesnar. I'm the WWE champion. Maybe Paul Heyman was wrong. Maybe Brock Lesnar can be the Big Show.
Recent history has seen many changes. And as the architect of this revolution, I consider myself to be the primary catalyst in creating a product vastly different from that of my opposition. Evolution is a necessary process, not only manifesting itself in nature, but a phenomenon occurring rapidly in world wrestling entertainment. Tonight, the most ingenious creation in this evolution will come to fruition. The Elimination Chamber. Six men will enter the structure to fight for their survival. engaging in a battle of the unknown, placing their bodies, their futures, and their lives on the line. All for an opportunity to secure the symbol of this evolution, the World Heavyweight Championship.
I thought we were getting the open of Home Alone there for a minute with that, the one music.
I know, really.
The one song when Bischoff was talking. But a good video sets up one of the major storylines, obviously, regarding Brock Lesnar, and then one of the major matches in the main event. Both were set up pretty evenly in that opening promo package.
Yes, which means tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you the 2002 Survivor Series. A show, JR, you were at.
I was.
Yes. Who was in that motley crew?
You know, it's funny. I was trying to remember because I know my wife went.
I was going to say, that was one of the ones Megan was with you.
Yep, she came. And Adam was there. Yep.
Adam.
He drove down, but we could not remember who else came.
Not Andy?
No, it was not Andy. Because Adam, you know, he wasn't living in Connecticut yet, so he drove down. And Jim, I think Jim came to this one with Adam. I feel like maybe he drove down with Adam because I remember him being kind of weird, as always, on like the subway or whatever. I know he did that at was that at WrestleMania?
Yes, he was very weird on the subway at WrestleMania.
I feel like he did it at Survivor Series as well. I'm pretty sure he came down with Adam. And Adam said it was someone else there he remembered never meeting before was with us. And I cannot.
Charlie?
Well, no, he would have met Charlie. I don't think it was Charlie for that one. It may have been, though. Because he did come from. Maybe it was Charlie. Maybe Adam was Mr.
You have it in the written review? I don't think so. No, I don't think you did.
No, I didn't really put any too much live commentary in there. I don't remember. I definitely know my wife was there. I definitely know Adam was there. And I think Jim was there, too. Because I remember him being there for the big moment at the end, which was
he would have been all over that, like something on something.
I'm pretty sure he was there for that. Yeah. So I think that was the crew. But I definitely was pouring, and JR references that early in the show.
Yes. Yeah.
And because I remember we met Adam, or like we parked, or he picked us up, but then we parked like, I was in the Bronx. I don't know where the hell we parked. It was some lot somewhere, and then we took the T in. But I feel like we met someone, and we had two cars. I don't know who the heck else it was. I cannot remember for the life of me who was there, and Adam can remember either. So anyway, inconsequential.
In the Bronx, but weird.
We were at some weird stop in New York, and then we got on the train from there. Like, we left our cars there. I cannot, no idea who else was with us, but I definitely know it was my wife and Adam were there, and we had a really annoying girl behind us.
Two opposite ends of the
I know, right?
Of the pleasantry spectrum right there.
We have this really annoying girl behind us that was trying to prove she could be a commentator. So she was like calling the matches nonstop.
Oh, Jesus.
And that was one of my favorite parts of Money in the Bank last night. Was for once I didn't have an idiot behind me.
I know, really. We didn't have like kids nice with signs or...
It was just nice and peaceful for once. After the Rumble, I have to deal with that moron. And then even just thinking back to the Survivor Series, this girl is calling every match, every move, trying to prove she could do announcing. It was a nice break, though.
Yeah, the doctor and I had a couple of jamokes in front of us at Extreme Rules, too. So, you know, marking out at everything. They had five T-shirts on. Oh, it was a mess. It was nice we didn't have any lunacy around us last night. It was a good time. But, I remember being watching at Mike's, and I remember it being freezing cold, and it was one of those rough weeks before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So, November 17th.
And I do remember we were up high. Not that MSG's that high, we were facing the entrance, and we were right behind us was Heat. So I think it was, I want to say Ivory was doing it with Cole. No, because Cole was commentating, so it had to be someone else. I forget who was back there. But
Kevin?
They were doing Heat right behind us. No, I don't think it was Kevin.
We'll have to ask him.
Yeah, I think it was definitely, I remember Ivory being up there.
Hmm.
So I can't remember who she was with, unless Cole went down, but I don't think he would have done that. But I know they were right behind us doing the pre-show, so we were able to like look up and watch them.
Interesting. As mentioned, that date, JR, you were there, was November 17th, 2002. Live from, as you mentioned, the home office of WWE, Madison Square Garden, in beautiful New York City, New York. Your attendance, a usual garden number, 17,930. Your buy rate, 0.67. I was expecting a little higher, but... And your announcers, of course, your Raw announcers, good old JR, Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, out in the catacombs.
Yes.
And and they were like in a freaky spot because remember, this was probably the last MSG. No, just 2008 had it. You know, like the garden always has like the little side entrance thing
right.
There. And they still had that. And they're like they were like out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So that
I remember back in MSG though. I thought it was a good choice for Survivor Series.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's there hasn't been one in 6 years since almost to the day.
Yep.
I think it was the day, right? November 17th, 1996.
You're the date guru.
I am the date guru. I gotta look. That might be 6 years to the day from the night from the last time the Survivor Series was there. In any event, and right at ringside, your SmackDown announcers Michael Cole and Taz.
Survivor Series 96 was November 17th.
There you go. 6 years to the 6 years to the day.
Pretty neat.
The last time a certain guy was in this building.
Yes, very interesting dichotomy.
His response was very different than the last time.
Yes,
but in any event. Before we do heat, JR, why don't we go through the Sutton files, talk about who the champs were, and any maneuverings on the roster.
All right. Our champions are the WWE champion is Brock Lesnar, the World Heavyweight Champion, still Triple H, World Tag Team Champions, Chris Jericho and Christian, WWE Tag Champions, we have new set, Edge and Rey Mysterio, that defeated Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle in a best-of-three match on the November 5th, 02 SmackDown from Manchester, New Hampshire.
I remember that match being very awesome. No shock there.
And thank you to Steven for switching the dates finally to me for US standard.
Yeah.
Cruiserweight champion is still Jamie Noble, and women's champion is still Trish Stratus. So pretty quiet month on the title front. Only one title change, which is pretty rare in 02.
Mm.
We head to the transfer center. Big Show has moved from Raw to SmackDown. Devon Dudley would move from SmackDown to Raw. Deacon Batista has gone to Raw. Ivory to Raw, and Maven to Raw as well. TV milestone, Scott. SmackDown has surpassed 170 episodes now. Heat passed 220, and TNA had just had their 20th weekly pay-per-view.
Interesting. I'm trying to remember. Was the champ, was it already Jarrett? Probably.
I don't know. Yeah, I think he won it pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. 2003 would be a good year for TNA. I want to. I can't believe I'm saying that, but good year for them anyway. And we'll briefly talk about it because they had some young up-and-comers that would end up being bastions of the promotion.
Bastion boogers.
Bastion Bookers of the promotion. Matt Rotellus of the promotion. All right, what do we have on Heat?
Well, before that, we also had Rebellion, Scott, we need to mention. October 26th from Manchester.
Yes.
Booker T defeated Matt Hardy. We had Billy Kidman and Torrey Wilson defeating Dawn Marie and John Cena. Funaki defeated Crush Holly. Jamie Noble retained his title over Tajiri and Rey Mysterio. Devon and Ron Simmons defeated the Big Valboski and Chuck Palumbo. Kiss my ass match. Rikishi defeated Albert. It's an odd choice. Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle defeated the Guerreros, and Brock Lesnar defeated Edge. Brock and Paul Heyman defeated Edge in a handicap match. Had Edge pinned either Brock or Paul, he would have been the new champion. So interesting match there. Also need to mention that SmackDown, Scott, from Manchester was Super Tuesday, a very special Tuesday edition.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Trish Stratus and Torrey Wilson went to a no contest in a bikini match. I don't know how that happens. Eddie Guerrero defeated Chris Benoit and Edge, and then Triple H, 3 minute warning, Chris Jericho and Christian defeated Booker T, Kane, Bubba, and Jeff Hardy that had been taped the day before in Boston. So did Benoit wrestle twice and
he must
Edge?
Have. He must have. Hmm. You know, and them wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. You know what that reminds me of, that match, JR? Reminds me of not Capital Combat. What the hell was it called? Capital Carnage. The pay-per-view in December of 98 in London. Remember when Rock fought X-Pac in that weird title match? It's like kind of like those weird, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's mismatch two guys and see what kind of match they'll come up with. I'm sure the match was very good.
Right.
I remember that, actually. Check it out on the network. It's on there. If you go to 1998, under the WWE pay-per-views, Capital Carnage is there. Rock X-Pac. Much better match than you thought. So
to clarify here, the tag title match happened on the 11/5 SmackDown from Manchester. That same night, they taped matches for Super Tuesday that aired on November 12th, and that was the triple threat with Edge, Benoit, and Eddie. So the title match was the 5th, Super Tuesday was the 12th, both from Manchester.
Okay, so there you go. They do that a few times in 2003, too. Like once every few months, maybe like three times for the whole year, something like that.
International, well, was this, no, it was, well, I guess it was an election year, off election, wasn't presidential, but
no, it was like governors and Congress and that kind of thing. Yeah.
All right, international heat. Tommy Dreamer defeated Justin Credible. Ivory defeated Jacqueline, and Raven beat Johnny Stamboli. On our heat, William Regal and Lance Storm defeated Goldust and the Hurricane. I do not remember seeing that match at all.
Johnny Stamboli.
Bah.
Did you get there on time? I think maybe it came in late.
This is one of the rare shows. I mean, you know me. I usually have a really, you know, trap memory on these live on these live shows. I mean, Royal Rumble 94 is like I was there yesterday, but this one for some reason I just do not have that many that much memory of. I remember being there. I remember the main event, and I remember, you know, the big debut. We'll see later. I remember where we were sitting. I just don't remember the ancillary stuff that went into it. I cannot for the life remember who was with us and how we got there and all that. So
I think the fact you don't remember who you were with is, I think, is
that's weird. I always do. I know there was someone else because I remember we met someone, and Adam seems to remember someone else being there too. I just cannot piece together who it was. I don't know who else I would have been talking to that would have came separately.
Right. I think that's funny.
Odd. I don't think it was. I was thinking it was a Fry guy, but I don't think he ever came to a show. I don't think I was. No, he wasn't even there yet.
No.
I don't think it was.
No, because he started after I did. And I started. I didn't start till March.
Well, Claire, if it was you, let me know. But I don't think it was him. I don't think we went to a show together until 04.
No, I don't think. Yeah, I don't think it was Claire either. Mm. Well, right. I know, really. So, all right. Anyway, okay. Let's dive in. I tell you, myriad JR of title matches. Yeah. I think we have all title matches except this one,
which
this
is funny since opener. They cut down all the titles.
I know, but every match was on the line. Well, they treated this. I got to say, this was the first. I feel like it's the first Survivor Series since maybe the turn. Well, I mean, 01, you had the. Other than the main event in 01, I feel like it's the first Survivor Series since like 98, since the Deadly Games, that it's really been treated like a big four. Even more than, you know, Austin getting hit with the Crown Vic.
Even and, more than the Invasion?
Well, I was saying, I feel like that show was. Well, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah. I feel like just. Couple years.
Yeah, I guess the main event. I guess it was more than just main event. Yeah. Okay.
Funny how far we've come in a year, though. I mean, if you just I just listened to Sorry Series 01, actually, our review of it, our vault, and just so much has changed in that one year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So crazy.
Oh, yeah, the roster's all different, and, you know, the two guys in the main event, the big guys in the main event aren't even here. It's like really it's bizarre.
Yep.
All right. First up, we have a six-man tag that, again, is the only, I'm pretty sure, yeah, the only match on this show that does not involve a belt. On one side, you have the team of Bubba Ray Dudley, still trying to find his solo babyface
yes.
spot in the world.
Well, time's up.
Yeah, pretty much. Spike Dudley, and out of nowhere, Jeff Hardy, who is pretty much solo on Raw because his brother Matt is now on SmackDown, and we'll talk about him later on. Taking on the team of Rico and 3 Minute Warning, Rosie and Jamal.
Yes.
Of course, Rico now kind of managing glomming them. With them after what happened with Billy and Chuck.
So in the 11-11. Yep, good.
Oh, I was about to say, it was there was a stip. Yes. You want to save the stip or do you want to?
Oh, no, good. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. It was not just a tables match, an elimination tables match. Mm-hmm. So, okay, go ahead.
On the 11-11 Raw, 3 Minute Warning wiped out Bubba, Spike, and Jeff and finished the beatdown by putting Hardy and Spike through tables with splashes. So that is why we set up the stip here. I thought it was a good choice for the opener with the stip, Scott. Like you mentioned, Hardy's completely solo now, and he's starting to go a little bit crazy with the neon colors and the face paint and everything else. He gets a good reaction here, though. 3 Minute Warning still getting a very strong push and gaining some steam. Lots of flying around early, a good train wreck style. Spike was eliminated first, not a surprise there. Gets a triple team flapjack through the table to knock him out. Hardy and Rosie go into the crowd, and they start to buzz, and Hardy escapes up the balcony like he always does in MSG and hits a Swanton bomb, and he kind of had to do this, right, Scott?
Oh, yeah. Well,
do the Swanton through the table off the balcony.
And even Jerry mentions the 2000 Rumble and what he does to Bubba, so it's kind of ironic.
I'll give King credit. He actually wasn't bad on this night. I did not mind him too much on the show. I thought he did a decent job.
You know why? Number one, the matches were too important to deal with any bullshit. And number two, other than the title match, which really didn't involve a lot of beauty, well, except for one of them, he didn't have time to goof off with puppies. And I mean,
I think it's just him being cut down. I mean, we only have six matches, and how many were Raw? One, three, right?
Half. They split them. Yeah. There were three Raws and three SmackDowns.
Yeah, so we only have to deal with him for three matches, and there really wasn't a chance for him, like you said, to get too pervy. So I thought he was actually tolerable on this evening for once. So Jeff hits the Swanton. He's just going at a manic pace here. Jamal hits a good top rope splash through a table on the floor to knock out Jeff. Mm-hmm. leaving Bubba alone versus Jamal and Rico. A Bubba bomb off the ropes finishes Jamal, and the three-minute warning sticks around, and they help Rico beat up Bubba until Devon Dudley makes his surprise return, decked out in his Dudley gear. And I thought this made sense. I thought both solo pushes were completely dead in the water. Might as well give it another go, see if things have gotten freshened up a bit now that they've been broken up since April. 3D finishes here for Rico, and the Dudleys get the win to, well, Bubba gets the win to win it for his team. I thought it was a good sloppy opener, but in a good way, a good sloppy, where things were kind of a mess and a lot of brawling and you know, misses and slugging and strikes and potatoes. Like, I thought it fit well as an opener at MSG to get the crowd going. I like this opener. I thought it was really well worked. I thought it was a good mix of guys, a fresh mix of guys. And I was actually, as much as I've been vocal against the Dudleys earlier in 02, I'm kind of okay with them being back together.
Well, you know, clearly the Reverend Devon gimmick was fine, but really not taken very seriously. And I think the other reason I think they did that was they found something in Bautista at the time. And I think they were thinking, you know, guys, I think we can use him for something a little more important than walking around with a
right.
Follows me, baby. Halliburton with a chain on it. So things were better. And, you know, the Reverend thing was. And Bubba Ray's problem was that he didn't have something identifiable
right.
in a solo. Like, you know, at least Devon was repackaged. Bubba Ray was just like, oh, he used to be in the tag team, and now he's just kind of floating around. You know what I mean?
Well, especially as a face.
Yeah.
Because he's not even, I don't know. he was great at the hot tag as a face in the Dudleys.
Right.
And just watching him sell the whole match, it was just weird. Like, obviously, he'd make it as a solo guy years and years later when he had even more experience, but as a heel. Right. So it was interesting here to try and watch him work as a solo face. And I agree. I mean, this both were not. They both had plenty of chances throughout SmackDown and Raw in this year, and neither really seemed to connect. And the crowd really popped for them getting reunited. And the tag division's changed. So it doesn't feel like we're going back to same old, putting them back in the division. We now have two titles. You need depth. And I thought it made sense to get them back together. And now they have some new teams to feud with instead of still fighting the Hardys and the Edge and Christian and same old.
Exactly. And we have a sports update, JR. We have a little history possibly in the making. And I know you want me to mention this. You'll want me to because it involves a team you despise. Jake Arrieta of the Chicago Cubs is no-hitting the Red Sox through 7 innings.
Ooh. I like that for many reasons.
Cubs lead 2-0. I had a feeling you do because I heard you talk about him yesterday. So, yeah. All right. So we'll keep tabs on that. 7-inning no-hitter going on at Fenway at the moment. Okay. I think this works perfectly. And, you know, the tag division, so long as Bubba Ray and Devon kind of, I don't say pay their dues because they don't really deserve that, but don't just like suddenly give them the belts and then make everybody chase again. Like the tag division seems to really be growing now on Raw with their belts. Mm-hmm. I believe now the belts have officially changed.
Yeah.
Because we see Jericho later on in the show, and he's wearing the new. So the very sad, JR, you know me with belts, and we have to put to rest the old school, awesome World Tag Team Championship belts that we remember back.
Say, they've had a hell of a run.
Oh, back from the Dream Team. I'm pretty sure Beefcake and Valentine were the first ones to wear them. And I remember JR holding one when the Silverback Rotellus, his cousin, let us tour the warehouse in Stamford. And I got to hold one, and they are very heavy. I think they're like iron. all the teams. Think of all the teams that have held those belts: Demolition, Strike Force, Legion of Doom, Men on a the Quebecers. Yes. They're the number one team, of course. No, the Brainbusters,
Godwins,
the Body Donnas, Sparky Plug, and 123 Kid.
Oh yeah, long legacy.
Yes, no. Not Bigelow. That's what's caused wrestling.
Do you think it was good that they put the Dudleys on the Raw tag division instead of the SmackDown?
Yes, because they would have had no business. They would have gotten lapped in the SmackDown.
It made sense to beef up the Raw division with another name team.
Yeah, no, they would have got lapped in the SmackDown division. Or they would have made those guys slow and worse. And right now, you can clearly tell SmackDown has its own agenda.
Right.
In terms of how they want their product to look. So, all right. So there you go. The Dudleys reunite. Bubba Ray and Devon, and he along with them, along with Cousin Spike and Jeff Hardy, get the win over 3 minute warning and Rico.
And from there, Scott, we head to the World.
Yes.
Where Stacy Keibler is hosting the pay-per-view for all the fans there, now managing Test, which we'll get to soon. Saliva then performs a full song, and I do remember sitting there listening to this and be like, all right, Can we get going?
Yes, you were.
You were playing in the arena.
You always get caught with the fucking 16-minute. Sorry, swearing. You're the 16-minute. On location.
Oh my
segment,
god! They weren't even in the arena, so it wasn't even a concert. We literally had to listen to the play over the video walls from the world. It was a really weird decision.
By the way, do you remember? She wanted Tess to become a superstar, a celebrity. So he was out with his
testicles.
Testicles. And doesn't that song? I feel like that Saliva song is the epitome of every pay-per-view theme for 2 years.
Every new metal team theme.
Oh god! And remember, that wasn't the only song they play that night too. They play another one later. Okay. Next up, we begin our stretch of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight title matches. As we go to SmackDown for their first match of the night, the Cruiserweight Championship on the line. Your champion, White Trash Extraordinaire, but a damn good worker in the ring, Jamie Noble, and his I'll kiss anything that moves girlfriend, Nydia, taking on a guy that he took on way back in, was it Judgment Day? King of the Ring? I'm trying to remember now.
No, he wasn't around yet for Judgment Day. No, King of the Ring was Hurricane.
That's when he won the title. So it must have been, I think it was Vengeance. I think it was Vengeance. Yeah, I think it was Vengeance too. And that was a guy who does not have fleas, and that is Billy Kidman, who I've talked about often, JR, as a weird kind of cruiserweight, because he is only 200 and,
right, he's a bigger cruiserweight.
215 pounds, something
taller
like that.
Too.
Yeah. And they had a great match at Vengeance. And,
he's at 117 pounds, like Lillian Garcia
like
said. Seth Rollins was last night.
Yeah, Jesus. I thought she was going to say, I thought she was reading the wrong card.
I thought she was interested in Terry Ruddles or something.
117 pounds.
I was like, what the hell?
Jesus.
On the November 7th SmackDown, Kidman teamed up with Torrey Wilson to beat Noble and Nydia. Kidman picked up the win for his team by pinning the champion and defeated him again in a non-title one-on-one match a week later.
Yes. And, of course, Kidman and Torrey Wilson are
friends.
Are they just going out, or were they married by then?
No, I don't think they were married yet. They were just buds.
Just buds. But that, of course, would grow over time. Anyway.
Like Scott and Lena.
This who? I don't know her. She's a good plumber.
Maybe the funniest thing you've ever said on the show.
This was a great match. These guys have good chemistry.
Kidman had his new music. Kidman had his new music here.
Was that song used by like 5 guys?
No, I don't think so. I think it was all him.
Yeah, really?
No, give you one, two. I always like that song. Rain still going.
Aggression?
No, it was later. It was on something though. It definitely was on a CD.
Forceful entry, probably, or something like that.
No, it was later. It was one of the later ones. Noble's reign's still going strong. He's been a great leader for the division, like we've mentioned a few times. Kidman back in the mix. Noble works over the neck of the back. Kidman makes a good comeback with some strikes, mixes in his drop kicks. Nydia, her interference backfires for a good near fall. And to me, one of the spots of the match was the nasty hanging DDT that Kidman takes from the top rope. Survives that. We get a great move there. Cole and Taz, I thought, were still great on commentary in this match, and it's carried over from show to show.
Yes.
Yeah. Kidman fights off Nydia, hits a shooting star press for the win, and a really big pop. And I thought it was a cool moment in the match, and it was a nice end to Noble's long run. I really liked this match. I really liked the moment. It felt like a big deal when he lost, and the rain ended, and the crowd just going nuts for Kidman. So I thought it was a really good match. And again, that hanging DDT that Kidman takes is just gross. I remember at the time, it's like, oh my god, that was just sick to watch. I thought his neck was definitely broken.
Yeah. I've touted Kidman often in these shows. But he's been fantastic in the ring. He's had good matches on TV. Obviously, this only, I guess, only being his second pay-per-view match.
Do you think he's going to fit in nicely with the SmackDown 6? I feel like he...
Yeah, it's like 6.5 or 6.75. Yeah. But I think he would have fit with... I don't think he's any... Ray is a better wrestler than him, but not by that much. Ray works differently. He's got a
right. I think Kidman could have hung with those guys. My point is that he kind of gets overlooked when you talk about the depth on SmackDown at this time.
Yes, because the cruiserweight division's so good. Jamie Noble.
Yeah,
he could have been included in that as well.
Yep.
At the moment, honestly, the only guys on Raw that even we'll expound more on this when we get to their tag title match later. I feel like there's maybe two guys on Raw that even come close to anybody on this roster on SmackDown. We'll mention them later. They're in the main event.
Run if you want to. Here gonna hit you with the superstar splash.
You can tell the crowd's like. Sad thing is, it's not bad for the crowd. You can tell. Like, what the hell is this? it sounds like Stu Hart singing. It's like,
go to the refrigerator. Give me a
bend your elbows.
Cheese sandwich.
Cheese sandwich. But it's like, oh my god.
You're getting the crowd like no if idea. You want to.
You could tell the crowd had no idea what to do with that. So, but a really great match, and I think I loved Pillman. I did love Pillman. I love Kidman's shooting star. I think it was one of the best finishers in the company at that moment. Hits it flush onto Noble, and Billy Kidman is your new cruiserweight champion. So we are 2-for-2 or 1-for-1 on title changes. So. Billy Kidman, your new champion. And now the big question, of course, will Nydia leave the money train now that they can't buy the double wide? Taz is funny. He goes, come on, Nydia and him will go to the double wide. And then Cole a minute later goes, they want to win this match because if they do, they'll buy a double wide. Wait, they have a double wide. No, they have a single wide. All right, double wide, single wide, whatever.
No, they were good. I really liked them in this match, and it's still just doing a really good job on SmackDown.
Okay, next up, do we have something in between?
We do. We go backstage where Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle are prepping for their match, and they rally each other, and they do the hug, and Kurt's really trying to make them be friends because Stephanie still wants them to work together for the best of SmackDown. So try to be buddies, even though they've kind of been ball-busting back and forth, you know, like guys do. And you know, they're okay with it. But they do the hugging thing, and the hug here is really funny where Kurt does it, and he's really looking into it. Then we go elsewhere where Victoria is going nuts. Backstage, looking in a mirror, talking about how the mirror thinks Trish Stratus is prettier than her. She smashes the mirror and freaks out. And Scott, we watched this on something called F View.
Yeah, I was about to mention, I caught that today, and I'm like, how was F View?
Yeah, basically a throwback to the old GTV.
That's right. Yeah.
Had debuted on the October 28th Raw. We saw Trish Stratus getting changed while on the phone, and the idea was from Eric Bischoff. That cameras would be backstage. So
in other words,
we've
come to the realization, that Bischoff is, it's almost like he runs like strip clubs or something. But he becomes so sleazy with his leather jackets and everything.
It's awesome
that he didn't wear those on Nitro. But I like how, speaking of Bischoff, though, getting back to that quickly, that opening piece, it felt like everything, the show is advancing, a manifestation of evolution, and then they show lesbians kissing. It's so funny.
Lesbians.
Lesbians. And that comes up to, what was that? Rosie and Jamal. Hey, they take on everybody from Billy Kidman. Spike Dudley. Lesbians. Yes. All right. Next up, our next title match, and you just prefaced it, JR. The Women's Championship on the line. Your champion. Trish Stratus, who won it back at Unforgiven when she defeated Molly Holly and then successfully defended it against her opponent this evening.
Yep.
And that is...
We're good.
Was there an invasion?
We're good.
I'm
trying to toggle between all these games here, the no-hitter and the Yankee game.
How about some invasion? The girl that Trish beat at No Mercy, and that was Victoria, except this time, JR... For the first time, I believe, in women's wrestling history in the modern WWE, hardcore match. Of course, you know, Vince would never do this that often because he wants to keep his girls pretty.
Yeah, but this was a really cool idea. So after Trish had won at No Mercy, this feud continued to percolate. And the night after No Mercy, Victoria, Chris Jericho, and Christian defeated Booker, Goldust, and Trish when Trish submitted to a Walls of Jericho. The following week, after Trish defeated Ivory, she and Victoria brawled on the ramp. And the week before this show, Victoria laid down a vicious beating on Terry before Trish made the save. The crux of the feud began to focus on Victoria's jealousy of Trish's looks and position in the company. And Victoria was looking to take Trish out and destroy her looks and, in turn, her success. So, interesting turn since our No Mercy match where Trish won clean and he didn't really have much of a story other than, hey, these two chicks worked the old modeling circuit, and they know each other. Now we've added this whole idea where Victoria is just angry and bitter about this, you know, the gorgeous Trish Stratus getting this push and success. So the hardcore match worked out really well. This became a pretty well-fleshed-out angle, and Victoria was fantastic in the heel role. She attacks off the bell using her shirt. A really cool hardcore stip, because, like you said, we had never really seen it for women in a legitimate manner outside of the nonsense we'd get sometimes in 99 and 2000. Victoria's great taunting while abusing Trish, choking her with a broom while sitting on the top rope. That was one of the best spots of the match there. Stiff garbage can lid shots by both. Victoria slams Trish face first into it. Trish gets a nice slingshot, whipping Victoria to trash can stuff between the turnbuckles. You get the ironing board and cane shots, who are all very good. Trish was possessed, I thought, looking very comfortable, has come a long way since we last saw her at Survivor Series a year ago, Scott. I mean, think of the progress she's made year over year since that show.
There's no doubt about it. And she's faced good opponents. She hasn't faced too much fluff. I mean, Molly Holly is obviously a very serviceable worker. Ivory. Jazz. I'm trying to think who else. Lita. So obviously she hasn't totally faced chop liver like, you know, Terry and you know, those that really don't have complete wrestling ability. So they've really set her up to just grow and evolve and become a really good worker. And now, you know, she's got to go out on a limb here. She's got to take some shots to the face and, you know, you break a nose or something. Sometimes that stuff stays. Yep. So...
yeah, then they do lay it in.
Yeah, no, Victoria does not hold back. I think that's what makes this match so great. And
yeah, she was just crushing Trish with some of the weapons.
Yeah, she was. It was like two guys fighting. I mean, she was smacking her hard.
Yeah, they weren't holding back. Victoria's nose gets busted. I thought it was a well-booked match as well. I thought the structure was fine. Victoria sees herself in the mirror, gets possessed by it. Trish botches a bulldog, but keeps fighting through it. To me, that was the only real down point of the match. There's a delay in the fire. Well, it gave another one. Victoria had a hard time getting off the fire extinguisher. Eventually was able to blow it off into Trish's face. She hits a snap suplex and gets the win. Strong match, shaky finish. But do you think this is way better than any previous women's match in the company? Do you think of any off the top of your head that have been better than this? I guess maybe Alundra and Bull Knockout.
Well, I was about to say Alundra and maybe Nakano.
Oh, yeah.
Or even Aja Kong. Any of those. Because those two didn't give a crap because they didn't really care about their looks either. So, I don't know. What about the Raw one? Didn't they have a good one on Raw? Alundra and Aja Kong, like after Survivor Series, late November '94.
No, they never ended up fighting.
No,
Bull and Alundra had a Raw match. It was good.
Bull and Dump.
Yes, they had a Raw match. They had a SummerSlam match and the Japan match. Two of them.
I wonder if the Japan match is on anything. I don't know if we've ever brought that up before, because we always talk about that match as one of the better.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never seen it.
I'm sure it's not on anything that the network would have.
If I ain't seeing it, does it exist? That would really kill a lot of wrestling's history. Strong match, still better than any of the other, I thought, in my mind. A good choice to switch the title. Victoria's a great character and worker. I thought she deserved it and let Trish chase her a bit. Maybe not quite as great as the legend lives on for this match, but I still thought it was very, very good. I really enjoyed watching it again, and I thought it was a good showcase for both ladies.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, it's not Taker Brock or anything like that, even from a women's perspective, but it's definitely one that will go down as, and perfect length of time, just a hair over 7 minutes. It's not going to go down as, you know, the greatest match ever, but it's definitely one that'll go down in the canon of women's matches in this era. Starting with when the title was reinvigorated in late '98 with Sable and Jacqueline and all. Jacqueline, there's another one. I don't know if Trish has faced her, but she's another good worker in the ring. Trish never faced China, huh? No, I guess not.
No.
So starting with that era, when this belt was reinvigorated and brought back in late '98, you're in this time frame, and really, you have very few matches where you've had some real stiff go out there and really go at the other person, other woman's match. And Victoria was not afraid of taking shots, and admittedly, neither was Trish. So I think you definitely have to, if you haven't seen it, go on to the network, go to Survivor Series or type Trish Stratus Victoria or something, or in the search or whatever. Definitely check this match out, because I think a lot of people need to think about how the women's division has evolved. And I think this is the match where you really have to say that Trish Stratus is here for real. She's here. You know, she's not fitness model like a – you know, you could tell that she's different than Sable. She's different than China. She doesn't have another professional agenda.
Right.
She's here to fight. She's here to wrestle. She's here to be a wrestler and to be a women's champion. Same thing with Victoria. And that's why I think this match is so great, because you have two women who don't have an agenda outside of the business. Sure, I mean, WWE will market Trish. She's gorgeous. But she's not here to like go something, all right, I've wrestled enough. I want to do the other stuff, which is what say happened to Sable, which is what happened to China. And I think that's the key thing, is that Trish is taking this very seriously. So I think that's one thing that I think people have to think about when they're watching this match, is you got two women who just care about doing what they're doing right at this moment. So Trish Stratus, but sadly, I think you knew Victoria was going to win here.
Yeah, but I thought it was, made sense.
But that's fine. It's okay for Trish to chase for a while. So Victoria is your new women's champion. So we are 2-for-2, JR, on title matches.
We sure are, Scott. So why don't we head to our next title match?
Yes, our next title match, which is co-main event. The WWE Championship on the line. Your champion, Brock Lesnar. Coming off his awesome Hell in a Cell win over Taker. And Taker off on this show, JR.
That's true.
Taking a spell.
And before the match, we go backstage where Big Show, still taunting Bischoff, says he made a mistake by trading him over to SmackDown. If you remember at our last outing, Big Show was bitching to Bischoff and complaining to Steph that he was being misused on Raw. And then we go to Brock warming up. And Heyman's nervous, Scott. He thinks Brock needed to rest after Hell in a Cell and should have stayed the hell away from the Big Show and not gotten involved with him at all. According to various internet sources, lots of sources out there, Hulk Hogan was originally set to face Brock Lesnar in a rematch from Lesnar's brutal beating on SmackDown back in August. Mm-hmm. McMahon wanted Hogan to put Brock over again. Hogan balked, wanted to win the belt, and Vince told him thanks, but no thanks, and Hogan would then leave and be off TV for a few months. I don't know if that's true or not. It sort of seemed like they were building that way, and the Big Show thing did kind of come out of left field. Mm. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was the plan. What does surprise me is the outcome here, which we'll get to in a moment, and maybe we could talk about where Hogan would have played into that. Lesnar had legitimately injured his ribs, was not 100% heading into this match at all. Mm. On the 10/24 SmackDown, Big Show came out after Matt Hardy-Rikishi match. After taking out Rikishi, Show announced he had been traded to SmackDown and was laying down a challenge immediately to Brock Lesnar. Later in the show, Lesnar and Undertaker had a face-to-face interview where they discussed their Hell in a Cell match the night before and basically clear the air and show mutual respect towards each other. Show would make another appearance and rip both men apart, claiming he was the reason Taker lost to Brock. Taker would retort and then head to the back. However, as he was heading up the ramp, Show reappeared and assaulted him. He ran into the set and then press slammed him off the stage and onto the floor, an assault that would keep Taker off TV until 2003. A week later, Heyman did his best to talk Lesnar out of accepting Show's challenge due to the beating he received at Hell in a Cell. Paul flat out told Brock that he couldn't beat Big Show in his current condition, mainly thanks to his busted up ribs. Later that night, Show would come out to challenge. Sorry, I lost my spot here. Show would come out, lay down his challenge again, and Brock came out to accept. During the confrontation, Show mentioned he was advised to wait until the pay-per-view to take Brock out, so he left him alone. Taz pointed out that Show said advised when talking, kind of foreshadowing something. It seemed. Mm-hmm. Show would quickly change his tune, however, and assaulted Lesnar at the end of his match with Rey Mysterio. He beat him down outside the ring and dropped him to the announce table with a choke slam. The following week, Show again assaulted Brock after a match, this time press-slanging him off the stage and onto the floor. Earlier that night, Heyman had again begged Brock not to go after Show for his own safety, and the stage was set for the big showdown, as Show had dominated the feud heading in. And I wanted to ask you a couple things here, Scott. First of all, has Big Show been completely rebuilt in your eyes over this last month to actually make him a legitimate contender?
Yeah, I think so. I don't have a problem with it. One thing about Big Show, if anybody cares, he can be packaged as a main event monster, whether as a heel or a babyface. It just depends on what you want to do with him. And SmackDown, you had the SmackDown 6, but they had their own little groove going. You needed to kind of beef up the main event with Taker gone. So I don't think the Hogan thing was the complete reason for this. Maybe there's a little bit to that, but I also think that Big Show was kind of lost in the shuffle on Raw. He hadn't really done much since the whole thing with Austin and Flair.
Did you buy him, though, going into this? Did you think he had a chance to win?
No, I didn't. I think this was a chance to officially...
Did you feel like he at least felt like a... I didn't think he was going to win either. But did you feel like it wasn't as much of a joke as it would have been like 3 months before, just due to the build that they put into?
Yes. No, that's what I mean. Yeah. I think the match came off with some legit heat, because obviously there was no secret that Brock was getting face pops. Were you feeling the heel change, the heel turn by Heyman? With this
a little
hold,
bit, and they were
don't
clearly,
face him, don't face him, don't face him.
Yeah, it was kind of weird that all of a sudden they were making Heyman not totally believe in Brock after their history. So it did seem like something was up. It did not feel like what happened was going to happen, though. Like, Brock still felt invincible, and Big Show had not been rebuilt that much. So it didn't feel like this guy had a very, very good chance of maybe winning this match. I mean, they did refresh his look. He's got the buzz cut now. And wrestling in the jeans and the spandex top to at least make him look a little bit different than he had.
Well, it kind of hides the gut.
the big diaper he's been wearing. So let's talk about the match, or we can talk about the finish. Another shot to rebuild Big Show. Been booked very strong. Interesting feud, as we mentioned, was maybe supposed to be Hogan. Brock was really hurt. New look for Big Show. Big Show's forearm is taped up. Brock gets a huge pop, and his presence is still great. The crowd is fully behind him here. And basically become a face by this point. After the respect angle with Taker, and the way this feud is built, he's basically become a face by default. Mm-hmm. Big Show dwarfs Brock, which is pretty cool looking. Just chucking him around the ring, focusing on the ribs. Brock hits a big spear. Oh, this is a pretty cool power match. And we'll see as the years go on. These guys actually have pretty good chemistry, and I think it starts here. Mm. Brock was working kind of a smaller guy offense, which you don't usually see him do. So that was kind of neat as well. Big Show is all rib work. Ref bump, cool belly-to-belly by Brock. Brock uses a chair and hits the F5, but Heyman has a shocking turn to end the great relationship between him and Brock that had been building since, or had started back in the spring. Despite all the foreshadowing, still a pretty big surprise. Maybe not necessarily Paul turning, but definitely Big Show winning, in my mind, was definitely a surprise. Big Show now is the world champion, a confusing win. Brock was hurt, so maybe that forced their hand. Big Show totally revamped, needed to be with Heyman more than Brock did. Brock was clearly getting face pops anyway. Scott, is this, in your mind, one of the biggest upsets in company history?
Definitely. I also am surprised. Well, now that we know the injuries were legit, I'm not surprised the match was only 4 minutes and 19 seconds.
Right.
Which is ridiculously short for a WWE championship match on one of the big four paper.
Especially after what we've seen from the SmackDown side with the title for a while now, all year.
I mean, we're talking about this SmackDown 6. I mean, you talked about Kidman. I would definitely put Brock in that group as well.
Yeah.
In terms of in-ring workers, fantastic.
Do you feel maybe they panicked? Do you feel like Brock
panicked
getting...
About what?
Well, a few things. So Brock's getting face popped, so let's get Heyman away from him.
I don't think that's a panic. I think that might have been something they were eventually thinking about.
All right, how about Brock being injured and them thinking maybe it's worse than it was? But he is out, if my memory serves correctly. We'll see. I think he's out until almost the Rumble. So it was obviously somewhat severe.
Well, because he doesn't wrestle in, we know that he doesn't wrestle in Armageddon.
Right.
So,
and I don't think he wrestled really throughout the, I feel like his first match back is at the Rumble. So we'll, this is one you got to put on the Kevin list, because I'm curious his backstage look at it. If the Hogan thing is true, and if Brock was hurt to the point that that's why they did this move. So Heyman and Big Show run off and dive into a limo and drive off. So your new champion. Do you felt this damaged Brock after all the hype and build they've given him?
No.
Okay. No, I don't think so.
Are you sad to see him and Paul split up?
Hold on. I just want to type that. All right, so we're going to ask about Hogan. I just want to confirm this. We're going to ask about Hogan Brock and about his injury. Okay, just want to make sure. I'll write the note down. A little bit. I thought they had good chemistry, but Heyman is just too unlikable to go along with.
No, he could have gone face. But do you think turning Brock, even though the crowd's behind him, should they have still kept him heel?
Depends on what their plans for...
Well, we know their plans. So my question is, should the other guy have been face and Brock stayed heel going into that match?
Well, if the rumor about Hogan was true, I guess he would have had to stay heel.
That's what confuses this whole thing to me. So was he going to stay heel? And if he isn't, is he still going to keep his title? The whole thing was very confusing.
Well, if Hogan was going to face Brock, then Brock would have won. He would have had the title going to Armageddon, which means we wouldn't have gotten the match we got. Would Brock have held it all the way to Seattle? It's kind of weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
And do you have somebody else win the Rumble? Well, you obviously do if he's still got the belt. But then you look at that SmackDown 6, you could have put anybody in that role. We'll get more into that in 2 weeks, and well, maybe 3 weeks,
right,
when we get to the Rumble. But is it an upset? Not in a match sense of, not that we can't see Big Show beat Brock, but I think the timing of it.
Right.
It's like he comes off this epic win over Taker. I mean, a career-defining win inside Hell in a Cell.
That's what makes it so weird.
And then he loses in 4 minutes.
Just
I think the 4 minutes part was
win.
His ribs. Yeah. I think the 4 minutes part was his ribs. So the question is why? Yeah. This one, K2 may have to shed light on this if he knows, because I think we could just be going in circles for the rest of the night. All right. So you're going to have Hogan. If it originally was Hogan, then Brock was going to win. So if he's taking Big Show, why not just not Brock win anyway?
Right.
And so, maybe have Heyman
the injury
do
must have came
else.
In at some point in between. That's my guess.
Yeah.
So he's supposed to beat Hogan,
and
now he's right. Yeah, he would have still been a heel. The whole thing is weird.
But I mean, ribs heel though. I mean,
it must have been
like
really badly busted though.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, he's definitely out for a while.
Yeah. Well, he's obviously not at Armageddon.
I know. I'm pretty sure if he does wrestle before the Rumble, it's not very long before. But I'm fairly confident, and I'm sure we'll get fact-checked, but I'm fairly and I encourage it on this one, but I'm fairly confident he was out for a while.
And he wrestles twice at the Rumble, too, so right. he was definitely gassed. Or, you know, not gassed, like blown up, but like his tank was full. Yeah, I think we have to ask Kevin, because regardless of who he was supposed to face that night, why would he win in one scenario and lose in the other? I think that's the ultimate question. Was the injury that big a deal? So he doesn't wrestle. Put him in a tag at Armageddon
right.
if the injury was not that
bad. I mean, unless they really... I mean, the other thing we haven't discussed is, hey, we're going to turn this guy face now. We don't want him as champion going into Mania as face. We want to flip him now. So that's one way we're not looking at it either, is that they just wanted to get the belt off him to start the chase to Mania.
Yes. Not to bugaboo your theory, but we could also say, you know, there's the other belt on Raw, and we obviously have a very strong heel at the top there.
Right.
Does it matter whether Brock's a face? Because that might not be the last match.
Right. But I'm guessing maybe they wanted his moment to be him.
Yeah, that's true, too. No, that's true, too. All right. Well, definitely a myriad of Kevin questions in a few weeks.
That's an interesting match with a lot of question marks around it, and a nothing match. I mean, while it lasted, it was fun, some of the power stuff, but overall landscape was just kind of blah. So
yeah,
disappointing there, especially when you look at everything Brock has done since his debut, all the great matches he's had, coming off the fantastic match at Hell in a Cell, and then coming to this was very disappointing.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that Kevin's got a lot of questions to answer, because I think we're all kind of in a weird limbo here, involving a lot of the scenarios. But the whole in the general end of things, the Big Show for the first time in 3 years, JR, almost to the day, the Big Show is your new WWE champion for the first time since.
That's right. Yeah. What a weird journey it's been for him. Since,
and that was a last minute thing.
Yeah, that's a weird. I mean, this guy is one of the weirdest. I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone who's been more weirdly booked in his first 4 years in the company than the Big Show was. Just so many up and downs and surprises, and
his only two major title wins were audibles.
Yeah, all very weird. The very very odd, and his just very weird. And his last 2 years since his last title win, or 3 years, I mean, have all been crazy as well. So I'll think of all the heel and face flip-flops, and he was basically a jobber for a while and then sent to the fat farm, and now here he is just back on top as world champion.
Very weird. I did like the change, though, with the flat top and the singlet with the jeans.
They needed to change something. They couldn't have him still showing up with the... You know, the diaper look.
All right. So the Big Show, your new WWE champion. Do we have anything in the middle here?
Yes, we do. We have just a shot of Dawn Marie and Al Wilson in the crowd.
Oh, yes.
Still going strong. Now engaged, Scott.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
So that sadly is not ending like we thought it may.
Redonkulous. All right, next up, yet another title match. So far, we're 3 for 3, JR, in terms of title changes. That's unprecedented. The WWE Tag Team Championships, that's the blue belts. As JR mentioned earlier on the Sutton Report, your champions are Edge and Rey Mysterio, who won them on the 11-7, right? Is that what you said? 11-7 SmackDown.
11-5.
11-5, I'm sorry. Beating Chris Benoit.
Well, taped 11-5, so yeah, I guess 11-7.
11-7. Beating, well, that's what I'm looking at the fun fact. Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle. And now it's a triple threat elimination match. Your champions, Edge and Rey Mysterio. Los Guerreros, Eddie and Chavo. And of course, Chris Benoit, the Wolverine, and his incredibly sexy partner in my friend's eyes. When he danced, he held me tight. And when he walked, he hoped the night. All the stars were shining bright. And then he kissed me. And there you go. Andrew Reich ruins it right at the last minute. I think I might have added Tiffany to that list. But anyway, your boy JR is easily the MVP of this company as we head to the end of 2002. In ring, he has been absolutely exemplary.
Mm-hmm.
This tag team has been fantastic. Very happy he left Raw. Because Raw, he'd just be lost in the mix of whatever the hell's going on in the mid, in the upper, in the main event scene of that show, of that brand. And once again, we have another complete piece of artistic genius between six unbelievable workers. I think another reason why D-Von left, they moved D-Von off SmackDown. You notice all the moves to SmackDown have all been real work rate guys.
Right, yeah. And they're clearly trying to establish patterns on each of these shows. I mean, it's pretty obvious what they're doing. Since winning the titles in the classic war at No Mercy, Benoit and Angle continued to fight and argue with each other week after week. This led to them losing the titles to Mysterio and Edge in a best of three falls match on the 11-7 SmackDown. Stephanie would then make the match here between the top three teams. Benoit and Angle would face off in the 11-14 SmackDown, but Rey, Edge, and the Guerreros would interfere, causing a no contest. Angle and Benoit would win the big brawl and then reconcile afterwards. And did you feel like the way they set this up, that this was it for this kind of three-way dizzle?
Yeah, I mean, it was time for these. It's been a great couple months, but I think it was time for these, for at least Edge and Rey. They had a nice run, but it was time for them to kind of break off and do their own thing. Same thing with Kurt and Benoit, because you had the two teams of singles guys, and then you had Eddie and Chavo, who, yes, can be singles guys, but right now they're such a groove as a tag team. And this is good for Ed after the great feud with Edge. I don't know if we've mentioned over the last couple of vaults, of course, the two of them had that great rubber match on SmackDown. I don't know if it was No Holds Barred or Last Man Standing. I don't remember what the stip was, but they had a tremendous match on SmackDown. I believe it's on one of Edge's DVDs. I think it's on the SmackDown set, too. So I think those two teams, were ready to break off and do their own thing, and whoever won this match would stay a tag team for the time being until the SmackDown side would kind of get some established teams again. Because honestly, JR, what should we talk about? The Dudleys going over to Raw. After these other two teams probably split, you kind of need to reestablish the tag division a little bit, because really don't have any other tag teams after this. Billy and Chuck are gone. I mean, who else do you have? Some new teams sprout up in 2003 on, well, both teams, really, at both shows. So you do see some teams on the horizon. So this was a good chance to kind of let the two teams with singles guys kind of split up and get ready to do their own thing and kind of refresh the tag division on SmackDown. So this was definitely a fine finale to what has been an unbelievable, you know, 10 weeks of, maybe less than that. But maybe 8 weeks of unbelievable wrestling.
And Scott, I'm afraid I jinxed poor Jake Arrieta, as with 8 2/3, I had Celebrate queued up for him, and Steven Drew laced a single to right.
That prick.
Of all guys, batting 120. So they pulled him out, of course.
The rest of that roster.
Now we're not going to get the complete game. Ugh, awful. All right.
Not that it matters. So this,
no.
Culmination
of the SmackDown 6 series, as we mentioned, lots of anticipation, hype to deliver, a lot of pressure on these guys, I felt. Still a lot of tension for Kurt and Benoit. Good to see Los Guerreros back in the mix on pay-per-view. Great heat on Kurt, as usual. I liked the Rey entrance over on the side stage. It's kind of a random spot for him to come out of, but it looked cool.
Mm.
Guerrero's really playing the shit-stirrer role in this whole feud as well, both between Kurt and Edge, Kurt and Benoit, as well as both teams. Angle and Benoit working to be a unit, friends, Edge and Rey Mysterio now champs, and all teams kind of positioned as even in this feud as well, which has been good. And any team can win at any moment. There's a lot of air of questionability around everything. Benoit and Rey match up early. Edge and Kurt renew their rivalry. Edge moving around well with a lot of good speed, great pace, quick tags, everyone getting their offense in. We settle on Kurt and Benoit working over Rey with suplexes and a lot of hammer blows. Kurt does the great little things, as always, when he works with Rey. We mentioned this both at SummerSlam and at No Mercy, just like the previous matches. All the little kind of facial expressions and the way he works out and moves against Rey, very subtle and very cool. Kurt and Benoit do a double submission to counter a spear from Edge in a great spot. We get a flurry of reversals leading to triple Benoit Germans. He goes for the headbutt, but Eddie hits a frog splash first, so Benoit headbutts him, which I thought was kind of stupid. Why not let Eddie eliminate Edge? That didn't make much sense to me.
Yeah.
Chavo uses the belt. He throws it to Kurt, so Benoit thinks Kurt hit him. They start to fight, and then they end up getting eliminated around 13 minutes. Were you surprised to see them go out first?
I'm not sure, because I think this match was more to give Eddie and Chavo kind of the shining moment, and I think it almost kind of makes kind of logical sense with Eddie and Edge having feuded. So I think that the distraction of Kurt and Benoit being out helps the end of the match. So no, I wasn't totally surprised. Maybe you could have had the miscommunication at the end. But I didn't mind it in the middle. Again, I think it enhances the Edge.
I guess they just called me off guard at the time, because they've really been, even though all teams have been pretty even, to me they're still kind of been the alpha team. So is this?
Oh, of course.
You know, to me, I didn't expect the Guerreros to be the last team. That's all. I guess I expect them to go out first.
It seems like they all got one reign. It's like everybody got to hold the belts once, and now it's the Guerreros' turn. So, so after Edge pins Benoit with a spear, as you mentioned, Eddie hooks Rey in one of my favorite finishing maneuver titles, which is...
Well, before we get to that, I thought it was cool that Angle and Benoit wiped out everyone before they left.
Beat down
everyone. Right. I thought the crowd buzz died a bit when they were eliminated. Did you feel the same way?
A little bit, yes. I thought of that. As I was listening today, I was flipping back and forth to my work, and then I would check the match intermittently. But I've enjoyed, because at work I don't totally watch all the time. I'm listening to commentary, and if a big spot comes up, I'll go back. But Taz and Cole have been fantastic in kind of maneuvering us through these matches. And Kurt and Benoit left, and I think there was a little bit of that sucks. All right, well, we'll see what happens here. And then move on, you know?
Right. The Guerreros,
I agree with you about the buzz.
They start to work over Edge, wear him down. A good shine for the Guerreros, who had, like we said, been lagging a bit in the feud. Interesting to see Edge get the heat segment with Rey getting the hot tag, something you don't usually get to see. Edge and Rey using good double team assist maneuvers that make them stand out in a unique structure due to the size, with Edge being so much bigger than Rey. Do you think it hurt Edge should be back in a tag team, or is this like an elevated version for you?
No, I had no problem here. This was different.
There's almost like these guys weren't really teams in a way.
Yeah, no, they were just kind of hooking up and kind of helping establish things, and they just wanted to compete. Gold's on the line. No problem there. Just two friends working together. It's not like Edge and Christian 2000 where they were an actual tag team. It's more like, oh, wow, here's a cool prize. Let's work on getting it kind of thing. And but definitely, like I said earlier, I think this was the time to break them up and kind of let them do their singles thing. And Eddie and Chavo, I think this kind of reestablishes Chavo. I'm sorry, Eddie as a player after pretty much losing the feud with Edge, which is fine. I think they were the one team that needed to win, believe it or not. even though it felt like the buzz was low for them, I think they needed to win this match because they were the one team that was going to come out of this group. And the other four guys were obviously just going to split up. So as much as I think the crowd wanted to see Kurt and Benoit win again, it was time for them to do their own thing. So
right.
I wasn't totally shocked.
Yeah, Chavo uses the belt on Ray, and then your move, the lasso from El Paso.
The lasso from El Paso.
Finishes up. Surprising finish to me. Guerrero seemed like the least likely to win, but like you said, they needed a turn with the belts. Good victory. They cheated to win, but still well worked throughout.
Almost
crowd surprise. Did this live up to the other SmackDown 6 matches in your eyes, though?
Not entirely.
No, I rated it
very high.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I rated it very high, but it was not as good as it was definitely not as good as the No Mercy match. And definitely some of the SmackDown. I mean, the two out of three were Edge and Ray beat Kurt and Benoit was slightly better than this. I think in this case,
one did you think was slightly better?
The one where Eddie and Ray and Edge beat Kurt and Benoit in the two out of three falls.
Oh, yeah, I think it was definitely better than this. This was really, really good and solid, but I don't think it.
I almost think there was too many guys in this match. There was actually too much talent, and they kind of all got chopped up. You know, the flow was not as good because there was too many guys, too many people. But that's fine. It's nice to have an overflow of talent than not enough. So, and again, almost 19 and a half minutes. So they got a lot of time.
Yeah, it's still very good. I feel like it's just the bar has been kind of laid so high now for these guys.
Right.
That unless they go almost like 4.5 to 5 stars, it feels like a little bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we'll get that again in a few months.
Mm-hmm. But we do get some fresh teams in 2003, so that's good, too, on both shows. Okay, why don't we take a break? When we come back, we will talk about a huge debut, or actually, you could technically call it a return.
Yes, more of a return.
Even though it has been, almost 9 years. But does make a return. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, our main event for the World Heavyweight Championship. First, a myriad of words. Because?
I wanted to celebrate.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture. Whatever's on your mind, too, we'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here. PlaceToBeNation.com.
Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith Blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
All right, Nation, we are back looking at Survivor Series 2002. Quickly here, though, we'll tell you about PlaceToBeNation.com, which you've missed over the last few days. Place to Be Network podcast is up, Scott. It's Dylan from Wrestling Culture, Johnny from Titans, Chris Zellner, and Phil Schneider from Segunda Callada, Blogspot.com, joined Will to recap Money in the Bank. As soon as it ended, they jumped on Skype, talked all about the show. We also had our preview from you. We have Scott Keith's review. We have Straight Shooting. We had our buddy Aubrey sat down with Andrew Goldstein, former creative team member, to talk about the show as well, plus our live blog going on throughout the show. So a lot of cool Money in the Bank features for everyone to enjoy right there. Chad Campbell did his Vintage Vault previewing for this show by looking at Trish Stratus versus Victoria, the women's match we discussed earlier. Our staff still going strong with the P2B movies of our generation. Up to 1985, Scott, a very loaded movie year. And if you're a movie fan, these are must-reads as we're going year by year.
Yeah, they've been fantastic.
Yes, must-read. We had a new episode of Where the Big Boys Play, looking at Super Brawl 1. That's Chad and Parv diving into that. We had a new episode of The Main Event up last week, where you and the boys previewed Money in the Bank. You talked about TNA heading into Bound for Glory, which will be coming up in the fall, heading to the Far East, Scott.
Yes.
Very interesting announcement there. Yep. Our buddy Albert Leroy, with some scouting experience, previewed a Mookie Betts pro career and what he needed to do to become basically the star that he's pegged to be. Came up for the Red Sox yesterday, and his career begins, and you can read all Albert's preview there. We had the usual accoutrement over the weekend with the Honor Report and SmackDown review and everything else. A new episode of the wrestling, all the big podcasts are back this weekend, Scott. Wrestling Culture Dylan and Dave looking at the 2014 half year in review. So if you're looking for some different podcasts to catch up on, a new Where the Big Boys Play and a new wrestling culture, plus the Money in the Bank podcast. So a lot of podcasts out there for you, including the Still Real Tour show as well. Mm-hmm. The high spot. Steve Willey had some interesting look at the way women have been treated in wrestling over the past couple months. Also looked at Batista, Wade Barrett, and the other top stories of the week. We had a new hard-traveling fanboys counting down the best comic book dads. Very interesting. And Scott, something we haven't got to talk about here yet, because it launched before or after we last recorded together, and that is the World Cup of Television Characters. 256 of your greatest television characters across multiple generations, multiple genres, have all been thrown into a pools, broken them up into groups of eight. In the first round, you must pick four of every group. Those four will advance on from every group until we get to 128, and that's when the real bracketing begins. Yes. So if you're a tournament geek, if you're a TV geek, if you're anything just bracket-related, you need to get over to PlaceMediation.com and cast your votes. Some of your favorite characters need your support right now. There's some tough battles going on, Scott.
Yes.
Mr. Belding battling out with Ralph Cramden. Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights is lagging. Needs 10 more votes to get in here.
I know. Ugh.
Not good.
Coach Taylor.
Not good. So a really cool tournament concept. It's going to be going on for a while because, again, 256 people. So the next grouping launches on Tuesday. So be sure to get in and get your votes going, and let's get a good turnout for this this tournament. Should be a lot of fun. New Steve Corino show, Guillotine Le Grand, was on with Steve. Mm-hmm. We had the NBA Draft live blog, and Cowboy Goes to Class looked at a bunch of Money in the Bank matches again to preview what was upcoming. So PlaceTimination.com, come back each and every day, vote in the tournament, check out our podcast, subscribe to our feeds, Twitter, Place2BNation, Facebook.com/PlaceTimination as well. We appreciate all your support. And if you happen to be shopping on Amazon, pop by our website first, click the giant Amazon banner. It takes you right to Amazon. You need to do nothing else, and this ensures that we get a little bit of kickback from them as well. So that's all we can, the least we can ask you. We know there's a lot of Amazon shopping junkies out there. If you can support us in any way, that is the easiest possible way you could do to help us out and keep us up and running. So,
before we conclude, JR, may I point a personal preference, if I may?
No.
Coming up this weekend, the Doctor and I will be recording our next episode of Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, and we would love your comments. Joel Barnhart's going to join us again for kind of a mid-year report because the All-Star Games are around the corner, and next time I'll have him on will be well after the second half starts. So if you want to ask Joel anything or ask anything of the Doctor and I involving the first half of the baseball season, please email us, extrapoint@placetobenation.com. We'd love your input. We do have some listener mail that we're going to do on this week's show. So you will be read on the air. So please, please, anything, questions, comments, again, for Joel. We may have a special guest as well, trying to get him to come on this week. ExtraPoint@PlaceToBeNation.com. And, of course, that will be posted next week. So thank you, JR.
Very good.
And let us now go back to one of the Doctor's favorite buildings. That is Madison Square Garden.
Yes. And I'm enjoying the meltdown on Twitter right now because... fans again jumping the gun, and you know, the big announcement tonight, Scott, was that a former world champion would be on Raw. Mm-hmm. And let's just say we get a couple teases and everyone's pissed off and crying and moaning, and then it ends up being pretty good. So I'll leave it that for you to not to spoil it, but I did enjoy the hand wringing that went down leading up to it, which I assumed was just them trolling the fans. So
of course just take your time, and you'll read all about it if you aren't watching Raw tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. When you get up, Raw recap will be right there. All right. Before we get to the main event, we have a huge debut. But before that, JR, we gotta have you know, something to stir the pot with. So a couple of guys come out. One of them you definitely know. One of them you may not know. He's been on and off TV over the first few months. Why don't I talk about that guy, and then I'll let you talk about your boy.
Okay.
When he starts.
All right, let's see how well you can do this. Let's go.
Okay. Christopher Nowinski was a Harvard graduate. Made the finals of the original Tough Enough reality show. He lost to finished second to Maven on the guy side. After losing, he hit the indie circuit, was quickly rehired by WWE, sent to OVW to get a little seasoning. He was called up for the June 10th Raw, and he helped William Regal defeat Bradshaw. He and Regal would form a brief partnership, two smart guys, helping each other win matches. Nowinski wins his first televised match. About a week later, when he beat Spike Dudley. Novinsky would use his Harvard background to show off his intelligence and talk down to other wrestlers, be very pompous. He would bounce around through the fall before getting into a feud with the aforementioned Maven and Al Snow over the Tough Enough results, felt he was hosed. And he comes out here to call the New York City fans stupid. There you go.
Well done. Okay. I was settling like in for a sandwich. I didn't expect it to go that quickly.
Succinct so. To the point, because yes. Your guy has a much more juicy change. So go ahead.
On the August 12th Raw, seething, Matt Hardy attacked his brother and cost him a match against Rob Van Dam. Matt was annoyed they had been passed over for an IC title match. After the attack, he jumped ship to SmackDown to embark on a singles career and a heel turn that had started the year before, Scott, and now is reignited here. On October, after a win over The Undertaker, thanks to an assist from Brock Lesnar, Matt began to revamp his persona, dubbed himself Matt Hardy Version 1, acting more delusional and arrogant, challenging top stars like Lesnar, Undertaker, and Big Show, and acted as a thorn in their sides during other matches and feuds. One of the best aspects of the new gimmick was his new entrance and his new theme song with computer design graphics and the ever-popular Matt Facts. The facts provided mundane and bizarre details about Hardy's lifestyle and beliefs, and for the first time, Matt had really crafted an interesting character and started to get over with his arrogance and ballsy actions each week. And to me, this is exactly what we needed at the end of 2001 when they attempted to do this the first time. A great, great character, a really cool role, something I latched onto immediately. And it's funny because the entrance seemed kind of, I don't say revolutionary, but new at the time. And then you look at it now and it's like, you know, Winamp is like the design.
Yes.
It seems so dated now looking at the internet design back then. But the math facts were fantastic. And I thought this role befit him perfectly. So Nowinski comes out to mock the New York City fans. Hardy shows up as well. And they join in and they're ripping the fans, calling them stupid losers, sluzers, whatever they're calling them.
Yes, losers.
Really killing time. And the crowd kind of knew losers. What was up. Yeah. And I remember being there knowing, okay, this is what I think it is. And you could hear the crowd start to buzz and actually start to kind of chant for the guy that they thought was going to start. Scott Steiner makes his return to the company with a massive mega pop. And Scott, I can tell you, I've been to some loud pops. Mm-hmm. Mick Foley win the title, Steve Austin, 2001 in Providence. Eventually, Chris Benoit, WrestleMania 20. I've been to some really loud shows. Daniel Bryan this year, WrestleMania. I have never heard anything, I don't think, like Scott Steiner's return here. The crowd just goes absolutely batshit. Just like, and the sirens blaring in the background. Just blaring and him coming out. And the crowd is thirsty for someone like this to show up. Even though the crowd knew it was coming, it was still amazing. He ends a pointless segment and beats the shit out of both guys. And I thought this was a great signing. He looked great. The crowd going nuts. And a fantastic, memorable debut. One of the debuts you don't always kind of hear about when you see those countdowns on those shows about great debuts. Like, they never include this one, which is just awesome. Just what a moment. And I think maybe the only thing that comes close to it is when Austin comes out and the glass breaks against to help Foley beat Rock, for me being live. Those are the two loudest I've ever heard the crowd.
The big bad booty daddy.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Why don't you give us a little background on the BBBD. I want to make sure I got it right. Where's he been? What's he been doing?
Well, we last saw him in WWF Ring in 1994. Since then, he and his brother would hit Japan and ECW before settling back in to WCW in early 1996. After a successful tag run, the Steiners split up and began to feud. A heavily bulked up Scott turned on his brother, cut his hair, dyed it blonde, and hooked up with the NWO, adopted the nickname Big Papa Pump, and would begin ripping off angered, crazed, profanity-laden promos and tirades dripping with sexual innuendos. Would win both the TV and United States championships and stayed a major player after the demise of the NWO. Rick would turn heel as well, and he and Scott would join forces. Steiner hurt his back in late 99, but after teasing a retirement angle, turned on Sid, hooked back up with a new, revamped NWO in early 2000. And after the NWO once again crumbled, Steiner would be at the forefront of the New Blood faction and win his first WCW Heavyweight Championship from Booker T on November 26, 2000. He would go on a red-hot tear, taking on major names left and right, until WCW officially shut its doors. He would drop the title back to Booker on the final Nitro, and when WCW folded, he was one of the hottest wrestlers out there. Instead of inking a deal with the WWF immediately, he instead waited for his AOL Time Warner contract to run out. In November 01, Steiner joined up with the fledgling WWA, and on April 12th, 02, he defeated Sid to win the title. He never defended it, and the title would be vacated when he left for the WWE, signing in October. The signing was leaked intentionally by WWE to make it fairly obvious he'd be appearing here, but never officially announced prior to the show. So, like I said, the crowd knew it was coming.
Yeah.
It had been leaked that he was probably going to be there, so it was a good tease to get everyone excited for it.
I thought it was pretty awesome. But it begs a question, though. And I'm trying to remember if we talked about this when we had Kevin on when we finished the first half of 01. I wonder if WCW did some kind of a memo, like passing out to some of the guys that had the heavier AOL Time Warner deal, saying, hey, are you going to do this or are you going to do this? Are you going to, you know, you can opt out of your contract with AOL Time Warner if you want to instantly sign with WWE, or you can just sit and do nothing and wait till you stop getting paid. The reason I say that is because what would make them, unless they knew he was coming sooner than he was, why would they bother having Booker beat him on that last Nitro to take the WCW title? And, of course, Booker would make his debut in June, whereas we don't see Steiner for a year and a half. So I'm curious how that worked. You know, like if there was a memo where they needed to know by the time the sale was done, you know, maybe some type of FCC regulations or SEC regulations. If they needed to know what they were going to do, you know, the Nashes, the Hogans, and all these guys that had the long AOL, expensive AOL Time Warner contracts. If they needed to find out, if they needed to know, are you guys going to sit around on your fat ass and take the money? Are you going to opt out and sign with WWE? What are you going to do? So I'm curious. I'll have to ask Kevin that if we had an arm. I'm trying to remember if we did. I don't think we did. I'm curious because obviously this guy was red hot, but didn't see him after he dropped the strap on that last Nitro in Panama City. And then he would win that weird. I think we talked about this once before, but was the WWA that company in New Zealand or Australia?
WWA, yes.
It was. Okay, I thought so. So I want to ask Kevin that. I know it's not in terms of the years, but it does kind of relate to Steiner. So this is huge. And you kind of knew already, even though we said he was a quote free agent, you kind of knew he was going to go to Raw. Probably had a feeling. You didn't want to. I couldn't see him going to SmackDown and interacting with Kurt and Ben. Well, Benoit. I mean, I guess he sort of did. No, maybe not. Yeah, I guess he did. You know, and Ray and all those guys. You could definitely see an instant Triple H feud.
Mm. Well, yeah, you knew he wasn't coming in to screw around. I mean, he was obviously coming in to play a role, an important role,
and. We'll get there. We'll spare judgment for the moment because the moment's too good and we don't want to ruin him by telling what happens.
No, it was an awesome moment. One of my favorite live memories ever. Yeah.
Two huge moments at the Garden. What, 11 months apart? Triple H coming back in January and then, of course, Steiner coming here. Huge. Big pop for Big Papa.
Mm-hmm.
Pump. Speaking of the Steiners, we'll talk about them on our next episode
Wednesday night.
We'll talk more about that when we wrap up. Okay. I believe we had two backstage skits, if I remember correctly. What do you have on your notes?
Yeah, well, we have Shawn Michaels getting interviewed, and that is cut off by the RNN update, Scott.
What?
Randy News Network. Randy Orton, who we saw. I don't know. Actually, have we seen him on pay-per-view yet?
No.
I don't think so. There's a guy who just... putting around on SmackDown, the son of Bob Orton. We'll talk about more in the future. He had injured his shoulder. He had then debuted the RNN, Randy News Network, on the 10/28 edition of Raw. And where he would do would be to pop up randomly during random points of the show and give updates on how his shoulder rehab was progressing and basically just kind of done to kill some time and keep him relevant, and ended up kind of turning his career around because a lot of people loved it. He was really funny and got to show some personality, and he had the email address getwellrandy@WWE.com. So a lot of fans really bought into this and started to get behind Orton a little bit, thinking, oh, this guy may actually have something.
Yeah.
After seeing that.
Yep. So, interesting. Then, of course, there's a backstage interview with the World Heavyweight Champion and Flair. So.
And we get the 19-minute Eric Bischoff promo comes out.
Yes. Bischoff was a good promo cutter, but I'm not saying this to – and this is not an insult to wrestling fans, as we two are. But Bischoff, like, used too many big words in his promos. Like, he was too – almost too eloquent to get his point across. Kind of sounds like me trying to describe something. It was just very long and way too many words. But the premise was there. All right. Time now for your main event. For the World Heavyweight Championship. And he's a part of this. So, a new gimmick. 1 month after my favorite gimmick, Hell in a Cell, we get a new gimmick. Yep, he's in it too. Tell us, JR, what is this gimmick?
Time to play the game! It's amazing how you knock me off my feet.
Elimination Chamber, Scott, 16 feet high, 36 feet in diameter, weighing short of just 10 tons with 2 miles of chain. 50-foot flatbed truck had to be used to transfer to this the arena. It took 8 hours to set this apparatus up.
Wow.
And this would be Eric Bischoff's creation, basically his new modern-day version of War Games in many ways. Mm-hmm. This is the new gimmick. We got 6 guys in the mix. The world title on the line. Do you want to name the ones that we did not play ditties for here?
Yes, of course. Shawn Michaels makes his return after, of course, he won his match at SummerSlam, match of the year.
And Scott, I can tell you with Shawn Michaels, it has been 1,772 days, total 253 weeks, 59 months since Shawn Michaels last appeared in MSG. When himself and the New Age Outlaws lost to Legion of Doom and The Undertaker at a Steel Cage 6-man match.
Wow.
Interesting little match up there.
Mm. What would that be like?
End of 97, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Or early 98, perhaps.
Yeah.
It had been 1,834 days, 262 weeks, 61 months since Shawn Michaels has last worn gold around his waist.
Yes. And exactly 6 years... since he was last here on pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
I'm very excited when I heard that on the radio this morning.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to get in this groove now. This 84 thing is cooking. I like that.
I'm starting to like that song way too much.
Also in the match, joining Kane as the guy that got screwed by Triple H. and Ric Flair.
I think they're all in this match.
Well, yeah, pretty much. That is Rob Van Dam, who, of course, got hosed at Unforgiven to join Kane, who got hosed at No Mercy. Well, Booker T didn't get hosed by anybody. He's just the red hot guy in the promotion. Chris Jericho is the other guy. So there you go. Shawn Michaels, Booker T, Kane, Rob Van Dam, Chris Jericho, and your world heavyweight champion, Triple H.
The road to this match began the night after No Mercy when GM Eric Bischoff said he wanted to do something big to trump Hell in a Cell that SmackDown had just had on No Mercy. So he came up with a contraption that no one could really wrap their heads around until they saw it live at the pay-per-view. The next week, Bischoff described it further. He said the match was a hybrid between the Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, and War Games. A structure in a big steel enclosed in chains that's even with the ring apron, with four chambers encased in plexiglass. There are a total of six pods, and each participant will be in one of those pods. Two will start the match.
Six competitors, four pods.
Right, four pods.
Yeah.
Two will start the match, and the other four will go into these chambers. Every 5 minutes, a random participant will enter. The match continues until five men are pinned or made to submit. The last man standing will be the new World Heavyweight Champion, or current. Then he announced the participants. Triple H, Rob Van Dam, who had been screwed at Unforgiven, Kane, who had been screwed at No Mercy, Booker T, and Chris Jericho, who had been screwed always, and Shawn Michaels, who had been beaten down at SummerSlam by Triple H. We hadn't seen him since that show. He returned on October 28th when he popped out of a casket and attached Triple H during a match with Kane. From that point on, all six men continued to interfere in each other's matches and cause havoc until this night at the Garden. And that is your build. So
I'm trying to remember that Raw where he came out. I don't remember him coming out of the casket. That actually sounds really cool.
It was cool that he was back here too, because remember, we thought maybe that was his one and only match.
Right.
So we're excited to see him back. Saliva plays Jericho to the ring.
Yep.
Long build with this guy. Between the entrances, the video, the promo, the Michaels and Triple H interviews, the R&N. I mean, I feel like it was a half hour between Steiner and this match here. And since our last match, has been a while too, between the Steiner thing and this. Very oddly set up show. Interesting decision with Hunter to start the match and rekindles his feud with RVD. RVD uses the cage early to beat on Hunter and establish the gimmick. Hunter bleeds right away. I thought RVD actually looked really good, got the crowd rocking. He ascends a chamber, but Jericho grabs his leg, and they're kind of showing off all the different options and ways they can use the cage here. So Jericho reaches up through the chain link in his pod and yanks RVD down. Jericho enters next. RVD is the early star, using the walls like Spider-Man. Hunter's selling a ton early, but helps put over RVD. A lot of stiff bumps on the steel by everyone. Hunter and Jericho would be an unlikely team for a while. Kind of weird to see. Booker came out next, evening the sides, still very over as well himself. Hunter really taking a beating throughout. Very smooth action considering the setup. Mainly because I thought it was all veteran guys with good chemistry, with a strong mix of top talent on Raw. Because we keep talking about the in-ring talent on SmackDown and how Raw, we almost feel like Raw was garbage, but it wasn't. They had a lot of veteran guys that you could throw in a situation like this and have them easily be able to adapt, because we had never seen this kind of match. They never had this kind of match. So, you know, considering the setup, I thought they were all pretty smooth out there. And then, Scott, we get the ill-fated RVD frog splash from the top of one of the chambers. It was a good idea, but a pretty bad execution as his knee crushes Triple H's throat. I thought in that moment that it was that Triple H may be effed for good. There were rumors even that he'd be out for a long time. It looked like RVD had fucked his knee up as well, because he gets pinned right away by Booker and kind of hobbles out down the aisle. So then I thought, well, is he hurt? And then word started to oddly spread around the crowd that Triple H was really hurt, and I don't know where this word came from since he was still in the match, but I remember thinking he may be done for a while. RVD went from star to goat immediately. I feel like he killed all his momentum in about 10 minutes. The crowd is pretty pissed that he gets eliminated. And a great snap spinebuster by Y2J. Kane comes in next. Triple H still down and out. Kane whips Jericho through the pod in a nasty shot. Gets a big pop. Puts over the viciousness of the gimmick. We get a Y2J eliminates Booker, which was kind of surprising. But did you feel like they're purging the faces to give HBK some shine when he finally made it in?
Yes.
You feel like there's a reason they get rid of RVD and Booker?
Yes. Booker, no. But I thought he was knocked out a little too early. I think it was fine for, but that's probably the theory. That was probably the theory that because let's be honest, it was continuing the Shawn Triple H storyline with these other guys kind of just there.
Right.
That's really what it was.
So I guess it hurt kind of to see Booker go out because he's been so hot and he's kind of the one guy who hadn't been beaten yet. But again, you needed him out of the way.
Yeah.
Kane would punish Jericho and Hunter. Jericho bleeds as well. Crowd starts getting hot for HBK. Scott, let's talk about his tights and his hair and his boots. The whole,
oh, good lord.
Whole package. He had like the shit brown tights on with cowboy boots and his Bob haircut. It's
weird Bob. Yeah, if you watch, if you have the Shawn DVD, the Heartbreak and Triumph, Triple H has a funny extra on the DVD about talking about his outfit that night.
This looked awful. It was still crazy again to see him back in action. Very exciting. You didn't get to see it again. Still, again, even felt like a one-time thing, even at this point to me. Mm-hmm. Kane goes on a choke slam spree, takes a super kick, a pedigree, a lion salt, and he gets eliminated. So now the odds are against HBK as he's in there alone with Jericho and Hunter. King and JR keep pushing HBK's back, taking that beating on the steel, how he can hold up. Mm-hmm. Impressive Hunter showing, considering the injury, I thought. Yeah. Even though he was had been barely choking for air, now he's up and wrestling and still hitting his spots. Jericho and Hunter double teamwork, building heat for Michaels. Michaels bleeds as well. A good near fall on Sean after a moonsault to Jericho. By Jericho. Jericho and Hunter finally blow up and start brawling. I thought that was a cool story throughout the match where they were working together but didn't really want to. Kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not anxiously, but reluctantly teaming up.
Reluctant, yes.
And they finally blow up here. Super pop when Hunter Sean hits Sweet Chin Music to finish off Jericho. Hunter catapults Michaels to the plexiglass, and the crowd is just rabid during this final segment.
Yeah.
Hunter works over HBK, cuts off his comebacks, working over his back. And then one of the best spots here was Sweet Chin Music into the pedigree. Well, the crowd starts freaking out. Hunter can't cover, though, and HBK ends up surviving. He blocks another pedigree and hits Sweet Chin Music a second attempt for the win and a mega, mega pop. Awesome moment. It almost felt like a Lifetime Achievement Award in many ways. Again, because you didn't think he was actually sticking around, so it felt like they were just doing this for him. Okay, he's back. He came back. We'll give him a quick title reign, and then he'll ride off into the sunset. Do you think this is best for the belt in business, though? I know it was cool.
For the belt, you and I have talked about this a lot over the last couple of months as we've been talking about these shows. I think you could have done this and still allowed somebody else to win the title. Sean could have still come through the door after being eliminated earlier and crack Triple H in the face anyway.
Right.
And then have somebody get the pin. I think I agree with you 100%. I think this was the moment. If there was going to be any moment, and we'll talk more about it as we get to 2003, if this was the moment to pull the trigger for Booker T, this was it.
Right, because you have all these other guys that needed the chance to cash in, and it was such a good moment, Sean. I hate that. I mean, especially being there live, and that's why I'm pretty confident Jim was there, because I remember we were going crazy, and the confetti falling, it felt really, really cool. But when you look at the way they were building that belt, and you had RVD couldn't get it done, Kane couldn't get it done, Booker's waiting, and then you have Sean kind of come in and take the belt, ending Hunter's reign already, it kind of felt like we were back to earlier in the year, where they were just moving the belt around when they should have just kept it on Hunter or given it to Booker. I think you're right. I think maybe this is the spot you put Booker over.
Yeah.
A tremendous match, though. Really set up the gimmick as something special. The crowd is just bananas for Hunter, and like we kind of teased earlier, a long way since 1996, Scott.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When Jose Lothario was hitting the face with the camera. And
crowd is hating on Sean.
Popping for Sid. Yeah. So different. What a difference 6 years makes. But for the last time we say it, in his career, Shawn Michaels is your new World Heavyweight Champion.
Yep.
It sounds cool, doesn't it?
It does.
It does sound cool.
I mean, it was a neat moment. Again, it's one of those ones we've talked about in the past with stuff like this. Like, it's a cool moment, but was it best for business? And at the time, it was really get swept up in the moment, but to already end Hunter's reign without putting it on one of those guys that could have really carried things. I mean, at the time, too, we didn't know Sean was sticking around.
Yeah.
At the best, he was going to be a part-time guy. So it was kind of questionable even at that. Like, all right, we're giving him his lifetime achievement moment. He's getting his title reign. But, God, we got, RVD's kind of been choked out. Kane's been choked out. And you got Booker, whose pops are still hot, but he's simmering now. And is he losing steam? And it felt like we had the chance to pull the trigger on all these guys, but we hadn't done it. And then we give it to Sean. So. And I don't want to keep hating on it because, again, it was an awesome moment and one I'll always remember very fondly. Just felt like maybe they missed the target a bit, even though they had good intentions. So,
I agree.
It was a very good card, lots of action, also a lot of filler, though. Very short on moment matches, but a lot of big moments. No bad match and a great main event. So it ends up being a pretty good card, a very good card.
Yeah.
But a weirdly set up card with a lot of downtime and filler and only six matches.
And probably a pay-per-view record 5 title changes.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever see that again.
No.
Maybe at a Mania. Maybe not. Probably not. I think the show's an A-. I still do. I have it in my review, and I concur with it. I think it's an A-.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was fun to watch again. I loved being there live. And, again, just the only, my only beef would be kind of the weird structure with the way the matches were set up and then going like 40 minutes between the last two matches.
Yeah.
Were kind of weird, but.
So, there you go. I would definitely, if you have time to burn and you're not sure of something you want to watch on the network, put this on. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at how great. Well, not pleasantly surprised. It's just a great show. I wouldn't call it a surprise. I think everyone knew it was going to be a great show, and it did not disappoint. So there you go. You have your two new champions at the top. The Big Show is your WWE champion, and Shawn Michaels is your World Heavyweight Champion. And I remember, maybe I'll wait till next week, because I went to the Raw the next night in Bridgeport.
Yeah.
It was my first wrestling show. First Raw, second wrestling show in Bridgeport. I went to a SmackDown in May. But this is, I think, my first Raw in Bridgeport the next night. And I'll talk about it at Armageddon. So there you go. There's your Survivor Series. Survivor Series 2002.
In the books along with us. Scott will be back Wednesday, though.
Yes.
Our network live watch with Steve Willey, Chad Campbell, and Roger Morissette checking out Monday Night Raw from February 15th and 22nd. 1993, back after the dog show, and I hear Hulk Hogan may be there, Scott. So we'll check that out.
After that 47-minute Brutus Beefcake promo from the
Kill Yourself!
What was longer, the Beefcake promo or Roger getting out of that garage last
I know, right? The 57-point turn he had to make.
57-point turn, poor bastard.
So yes, we will be chatting that on Wednesday with the crew, and then next Monday, back with Armageddon 2002. Episode 13 next Wednesday of the Kevin Kelly Show and of the main event.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Scott, we go on a little sabbatical.
Yes.
You're going to be departing on a cruise. We're going to wish you the fair voyage like we have many times.
Yes, we have. So and, of course, you know what's going to happen that Raw that whoever writes, CM Punk's going to come back.
Right. Something big's going to happen on the July 14th Raw. Make sure you tune in. So we'll have no show, no PTB that week. And then, Scott... No PTB the next Monday either, coming off of St. Mary's Day weekend. Always tough for me to get settled back in to do that show. We'll be both wiped out. And then that Wednesday will be our Kevin Kelly main event 14. So we are going to be off from next Monday, the 7th, until Monday, the 28th. So pretty much most of July we'll be off as far as PTB goes. We'll have two Kevin Kelly, two main events in that time. But then we'll be back on schedule following that. So I just want to give everyone the heads up now. We'll be off a couple weeks from PTV in the middle of July there. So, but we'll be back Wednesday night with the boys looking at Raw. And until then, everyone enjoy the rest of your night. We'll talk to you Wednesday. I think Lena went over the borderline.
57-point turn.
Chip on the table.